You could tell he was nervous as he shook hands with all the other competitors beside him. But really, who wouldn't be? The Olympic Games were just months away. So much was on the line at this track meet, and yet in seconds it'd all be over. Although the spectators waited on bated breath for the sound of the gun, that was nothing compared to the throbbing heartbeats that coursed through his veins as he sat in the starting position. Finally, the gun sounded, and every one of his muscles tensed and pushed his legs into motion. But only moments into the race, at the first bend of the track, he tripped over the legs of another runner and tumbled to the ground. It was supposed to be over for the Flying Scotsman. This was a race of seconds. Such a fall was a runner's end. The 30 yards that separated him from the pack of runners might as well have been 1,000 miles. But he got up. He found his lane and then began to run like a madman. That familiar, odd gait that he was known for. Knees high, arms pumping at the wind, head back as though he were looking into the sky. At first it was absurd. Useless. At most only a show of competitive spirit. But then the gap between Eric Liddell and the pack of runners became smaller and smaller. And before anyone in the stands could fully comprehend what was happening, Liddell had not only joined the group of sprinters, he not only caught up with the leader, but he passed the lead runner within the last 3 yards to win the race. It was astounding. A local sports page called The Scotsman said, quote, "The circumstances in which Liddell won the event made it a performance bordering on the miraculous. Veterans whose memories take them back 35 years, and in some cases longer, in the history of athletics, were unanimous in the opinion that Liddell's win in the quarter mile was the greatest track performance they had ever seen." End quote. What many do not know is what it took physically, not only to finish, but to win that single race. It damaged his body to such a degree that he did not win another race for the rest of that critical summer. Certain muscle tissues in his legs were badly damaged, taking months to fully heal. Without a doubt, Eric gave his all in that race, revealing a characteristic that not only followed him on the fields of competition, but on the fields of a commission. Although the fleeting spark of fame would show to the world an Olympic champion, what very few realize is his ultimate surrender was as a missionary, telling others of the God he loved so very much. I'm Ronnie Brown, and this is Forgotten. Liddell is not necessarily forgotten in the world today. You don't have a major motion picture about your life go on to win 4 Academy Awards and pass completely from cultural consciousness. The 1981 film Chariots of Fire tells the exceptional story of Liddell in fairly accurate detail. Liddell was born the son of Scottish missionaries in China in 1902. When he was 6 years old, he and his brother Robert were returned to Scotland to continue their education. They had a normal childhood during that time, raising pigeons and collecting lizards. But the older they got, the more their interest turned to sports. Eric excelled in sports, playing cricket and rugby. But by the time he entered college, he was widely known as one of the fastest runners in Scotland. In 1923, he set a British record of 9.7 seconds in the 100-yard dash, a feat that would not be equaled for 23 years. By the time the Paris Olympics came in 1924, Eric was to represent Scotland in the pursuit of its first Olympic medal. You can imagine the shock and outrage that took place in Scotland when Eric Liddell refused to run in his best race, the 100-meter sprint, because the race was held on a Sunday. But instead, he would run in the 400-meter race the following day. This was an event that he was not considered a contender for winning a medal. Needless to say, Eric held deep convictions concerning the Lord's Day, regarding it as a day of worship and of rest, not a day for racing and competition. There was enormous pressure put on the young Scotsman to run the race in which he was favored to win. When an Olympic committee member tried to convince him that the Continental Sabbath ended at noon, Eric replied, quote, "Mine lasts all day," end quote. No doubt Eric must have felt like he was taking on the world. This may be why a simple gesture of an admiring fan made such an impact on him. On the morning of the 400-meter race, Liddell was handed a folded square piece of paper from one of the team masseurs. He stuck it in his pocket and promised to read it later. Moments before the race, he remembered the note. It read, quote, "In the old book it says, 'He that honors me, I will honor. Wishing you the best of success always,'" end quote. As he would tell others later, Eric was deeply moved that someone believed in the stand that he had taken. Liddell was supposed to lose the 400-meter race. He was a sprinter and should have taken off at too fast of a pace to have energy to win the race. He was supposed to run out of gas just short of the finish line. But that's not what happened. Yes, he took off like a sprinter, shooting out ahead of the pack of runners, but he didn't slow down. As a matter of fact, he ran the entire race in a dead sprint. And although he was challenged during the final leg of the race, he won it in record time. It was one of the most remarkable moments in Olympic history. The wonder and greatness of that moment was not lost on Eric, but it was directed toward a different end. This deeply committed Christian knew that God had made him fast, and that his running pleased God and brought glory to God. His notoriety as an athlete opened up doors of opportunity to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with people who would never set foot in a church, but would come to hear what the Flying Scotsman had to say. This is pretty much where the motion picture story of Liddell's life ends. The remainder of his life is more of a footnote than anything else. But a good judge of who Liddell was cannot be seen in his races on the track, but in his surrender to God's call on his life to enter the mission field. Liddell knew that his life's work was not confined to the arenas of cheering fans. No, from an early age, he knew that his life was to be spent in China as a missionary. His running may have been to the glory of God, but in his own words, he said he was made for China. The sports world was stunned that this young Olympic gold medalist would leave fame and wealth and live in anonymity and want. But that's exactly what Eric Liddell did. Liddell would set out upon this path as a missionary after graduating from Edinburgh University and traveling to Tianjin, the city where his parents were missionaries when he was a child. He moved into the home with his parents on the compound of the London Missionary Society. Their mission was conducting a children's school in the city so that some of the more affluent families in Tianjin would send their children there where they'd be introduced to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Eric quickly settled in as a school teacher and athletic coach, and because of his good humor and genuine care for his students, he soon became a favorite among the teachers of the school. He was also active in Bible studies and taught Sunday school. It was not too many years after he arrived that Eric took a special interest in one of the daughters of the missionary families there in Tianjin, Florence McKenzie. On the day of her 18th birthday, Eric proposed marriage, and she accepted. Her father, Mr. McKenzie, approved of the marriage, but under the condition that Florence would return to Canada, their native country, and finish her education as a nurse. This would mean 3 years of separation between the two, but those years would pass quickly, and by 1934 they were married, and in just a few years they would have two daughters, Patricia Margaret and Heather Jean. It was during this time that life became unsteady in Tianjin, and China as a whole. Japan became more and more brazen in their aggressions against China. And finally, in 1937, Japanese planes attacked Tianjin. And not many days after, the city fell into the Japanese hands. Now, although the Chinese population was at the mercy of the Japanese, much of the city of Tianjin was considered a territory of Great Britain. Therefore, the war and hostility was all around them as they tried every day to continue their labor at the school and now among the many Chinese refugees that streamed in. In 1939, Eric and his family had opportunity to go on furlough to visit their native homelands. After stopping in Canada to visit the family of Florence, they eventually went on to Scotland. And although the war was taking place in Europe all around them, they had the chance to spend 5 happy months of family life in Scotland. Although their arrival in Scotland was without incident, their trip back turned out to be very dangerous. They were part of a convoy of 50 ships heading back to Canada. German U-boats located the convoy, and a torpedo actually struck the ship that the Liddells were aboard. But the torpedo did not detonate, and they arrived safely in Canada unharmed, while 5 other ships were sunk in the attack. Upon arriving in Canada, a decision was to be made. The world around them was in turmoil. Should they return to China, into the very heart of danger, or remain in safety with Florence's family in Canada? After much prayer and discussion, the decision was made that God's call to the people of China, the will of God for their lives, held within it God's guidance and protection. They would return to China. Upon arriving, Eric settled his wife and children back at the school in Tianjin. Then he left for Xiaojiang, an outpost further inland from Tianjin, under new instructions from the London Missionary Society. Eric was to assume the position as a local pastor in that area. This location was far too dangerous for his wife and children. His ministry there in Xiaojiang was beset on all sides by great need, suffering, and violence. Japanese forces performed unspeakable horrors onto the Chinese people. It was not unusual for Liddell to ride his bicycle through villages where the men had been murdered, the women had been raped, and the homes burned to the ground. Eric did his best to serve the Lord by serving the people of Xiaojiang and the surrounding areas. But week by week, the situation became worse and worse, even for Florence and the children back in Tianjin. A decision was then made. Florence, who was then expecting their 3rd child, and the 2 girls would return to Canada to be with family. And the plan was for Eric to follow them in the coming year. In an emotional moment for all of them, Eric escorted his wife and children to a ship bound for Canada. Eric hugged and kissed his family goodbye, telling his 6-year-old daughter Patricia to help her mother when the baby comes. When they parted, Florence and the children rushed to the upper deck and scanned the dock to find Eric. It was then that he looked back and waved a hearty goodbye as the steamer began to move away. This parting look would mark the last time Eric would see his wife and children. Liddell made his way back to Tianjin, where he had temporarily been assigned, and began again to pour himself into the work of the ministry. Just a few months after he received the news that his 3rd daughter, Maureen, had been born safely, everything changed. December 7, 1941 marks the date when Japanese infamously attacked Pearl Harbor. At the same time, Japanese forces increased in China. In the city of Tianjin, the safe zones considered British soil were no longer respected. All foreign occupants were rounded up and placed in the confines of the missionary compound, making it incredibly overcrowded. And worst of all, the missionaries were ordered to no longer do the work they were sent there to do. No evangelism, no preaching, no more ministry. After a year and a half of being under guard in the compound at Tianjin, all foreigners were to be relocated to an internment camp in Weishi Inn, located several hundred miles away from Tianjin. In all, there were several hundred people from all walks of life that made this journey by rail to Weixin. Among them were not only missionaries, but tourists, musicians, businessmen, prostitutes, and opium addicts, not to mention a number of children who'd been separated from their parents. When they arrived, they were herded into a one-block compound built by Presbyterian missionaries. Although it had 400 rooms, a hospital, and a church, it was not much more than a prison camp with its guard towers and machine gun nests. The buildings were run down and in much need of repair. Most of the equipment in the hospital had been confiscated, along with much of the plumbing that had been stripped away, making the bathrooms absolutely filthy. And yet the name of the compound was the Courtyard of the Happy Way. But this motley crew set to work on making the place livable. And, at least in the beginning, everyone did their part to make the best out of a bad situation. Eric threw himself into activities, teaching in the camp school, organizing sports events, and planning worship services. He especially did all that he could for the children of the camp, many of which had been separated from their parents. Perhaps he thought of his own daughters and how blessed they were to be so far from this terrible scene. He became known to all of them as Uncle Eric. In all this time, Liddell never became lax when it came to his spiritual disciplines. Every morning he would rise early to read his Bible, to pray, and to listen to God. It was during these days of confinement that he even wrote a book on spiritual disciplines that's still in print today. Eric Liddell was very much the lead figure in the camp, doing all that he could to keep up morale and to keep conflicts down. He was also well-respected, so well-respected, in fact, that when many disputes came up in the camp, Liddell was usually the first one to settle the matter. But as the weeks dragged into months and months into years, things began to change in the camp. Little by little, the attitude and mentality of unity began to disappear. People began to steal food and other possessions from one another. People became more and more irritable and selfish. It was during this time that Liddell taught a Bible study that had a profound impact on all the camp. He taught on the importance of loving one's enemies as Jesus commanded them to do, even going so far as to love and to pray for their Japanese captors. This lesson so deeply impressed one young man that he surrendered to God to be a missionary, and as soon as the war was over, he'd go to Japan to fulfill this commitment. But it was during this time that Liddell's faith was not only in word, but in deed as well. One of the people in the camp was Stephen Medcalf, who was 17 at the time, and he relayed an incident that magnifies Eric's selflessness. During the winter of 1944, Stephen's shoes had completely worn out to such a degree that he was practically barefoot. Eric approached him with something wrapped in a cloth. He said, quote, "I see that you have no shoes and it's winter. Perhaps you could use these," end quote. Eric gave the bundle into Stephen's hands. He unwrapped them to find a pair of running shoes. There's little doubt that these were the very shoes that Eric had worn in his 1924 gold medal performance. But such a sentimental token paled in comparison to his brother in need. At the close of 1944, Eric began to experience health problems. He had a bout with the flu, from which he recovered, but he kept reoccurring headaches, which seemed to puzzle doctors. Some suggested that because of his tireless work, he might have suffered a nervous breakdown. Still others estimated that he was dealing with depression, having been years since he had seen his wife and daughters, one of which he'd never laid eyes on. In a letter to his beloved Florence, which was by force limited to only 25 words, Eric wrote this, quote, "You seem very near to me today. It is the 10th anniversary of our wedding. Happy loving remembrances. We must celebrate it together next year," end quote. In February 1945, Liddell had a stroke. But after just a few days in the hospital, he seemed to quickly recover, telling all around him that he was much better. As these symptoms played out, doctors soon suspected that he had a brain tumor, yet there was no equipment to tell for sure. Joyce Stranks was a 16-year-old girl that was one of the many teenagers that Eric discipled. She said of her teacher, quote, "Although I had accepted the Lord as a child of seven, it was not until this time in my life when, as a result of Eric Liddell's influence, I personally surrendered to the full will of God," end quote. On February 21, 1945, Joyce came into Eric's hospital room, as she often did, to spend time with her teacher. As they sat, they talked about the subject of the surrender to God from Eric's book on discipleship. Eric looked intently at Joyce and began to say, "Surrender, surrender." At that moment, his head convulsed backwards as he fell onto the bed. The frightened girl cried and screamed for the nurse, but by the time she arrived, he was gone. Eric Liddell's final race was completed. A later autopsy would confirm the worst suspicions of the doctors at the compound hospital. Eric suffered from a massive brain tumor. It is quite possible that Eric may have lived longer in different conditions. Overwork and malnourishment were contributing factors to his death. It is rumored that Liddell had an opportunity to leave the camp. In 2008, just before the Beijing Olympics, Chinese authorities claimed that Liddell had refused an opportunity to leave the camp. Evidently, a deal was brokered by Winston Churchill to release Liddell in a prisoner exchange. But Liddell declined the opportunity, preferring that a pregnant woman who was in the camp at the time go in his place. This release, no doubt, saved both the woman and the baby's life. Although none of his friends or those who lived with him in the camp ever verified this story, it would not lay outside of Eric's character to do such a thing, and no one ever even knew. Just as he did in the race, where he stumbled out of the starting gate, nothing distracted him from the finish line. He completely surrendered himself to the race that God had placed him in. Liddell once said, quote, "It has been a wonderful experience to compete in the Olympic Games and to bring home a gold medal. But since I've been a young lad, I've had my eyes on a different prize. You see, each one of us is in a greater race than any I have run in Paris. And this race ends when God gives out the medals," end quote. May it be said of us, as it surely was said of Eric Liddell, when he finally crossed the finish line of his life, "You have fought a good fight. You have finished your course, and you've kept the faith." Forgotten is written and produced by me, Ronnie Brown. You can find out more about this show at ForgottenPodcast.com. And as always, thanks for listening.